Next Step number 353, March 12th, 2015.
Hi there, this is Susie from In Your Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazgen, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast that puts it all together, that connects the dots between the ancient and the contemporary, between the physical, the spiritual, and the emotional. Hey, this is a podcast that looks at the very fabric of our being through one of the most ancient of all lenses, namely Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. And if you're ready for this Armodox look, I know I am. Let's take the next step. So glad to have you with us. Whether you are crawling, walking, or running, you're taking a next step right now, wherever you may be. I am broadcasting from Epostle West, our Glendale studio, and it is just a gorgeous day. It is beautiful, and it is hot, okay? I know, I'm not supposed to be creating envious situations for you. You're not supposed to be envying anything, right? But it is gorgeous over here. I know what you're going through over there. A lot of cold weather all over the place. Well, it is. We're still in winter, technically, but it's just hot. It's hot. In fact, I had to run the air conditioning in the car. But whatever the case may be, okay, let's put envy aside, okay, whatever the case may be, if you're hot, you're cold, you know, turn up the air conditioning, turn up the heater, or just relax, kick back, enjoy the next few moments. But don't kick back too much if you're driving, okay? Please, I always have to throw that in. I'm always scared. I always say, you know, just like kick back and relax. You know, you can't relax if you're driving, especially here in Southern California. But whatever the case may be, next few moments, we're going to be together. And I hope I've got a great show for you. I hope you're going to enjoy it. We've got Gabriel Starring. Had a chance to reconnect with him after a couple of years. We've been in contact via email and, of course, his posts. And yesterday, him and his wife, Katie J, joined me. And we had a chance to talk, reconnect, talk about the project that's coming up, the 100-year journey, the 100 souls in his shoes, the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide. And had also had a chance to put him in front of a microphone. And we've got a small interview for you, and I know you're going to enjoy that. That's coming up in the second portion of today's show. I want to start off by thanking everybody. We've got a slew of email over that Superman broadcast that we did last week. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I have to admit, that was really a fun one for me to do. And thank you. Thank you for your comments. It was just a great one. And I know we hit a lot of nerves. So we hit a lot of people related to that. And that's what it's all about. So anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed that one. Also got a note from a gentleman named Paul. I wanted to share that with you. This is really beautiful. Let me cue it up on my screen real quickly. I'm going to share this email with you because what I'd like to talk about, an incident that took place last night. We are in the midpoint of the Lenten season. And it's in Armenian, we refer to it as miching, and it means the absolute middle. And right now we are past that miching point. So there's less days of Lent in front of us than there are behind us, which is, yeah, celebration. Yeah. Are you guys tired of this vegan diet? Jeez, are you ready to put your teeth in some meat? Well, it's not all about that meat. And I know. Our church fathers gave us this Lenten season, and we go to this crash vegan diet. I guess, in a sense, it was like the ancient way of just purifying and lowering cholesterol. Huh? Isn't that nice? 40 days, just lower your cholesterol level. But of course, it's not about diet. It's about really finding what is the essence. Are we able to look at our lives in a very meaningful way? What do we really need to survive? What is it out there that really makes us tick? That's what Lent is all about. It's really finding out who we are. And so we bring life down to a bare minimum. What's essential for us to survive, and in that survival, finding out a part of ourselves. And this email that I got from Paul, it's just beautiful, because he's reflecting about a life that was lost, a close friend of his who passed away. And I want you to just check out the words that he used. I was very moved by this expression over here. So his friend has passed away, and he's reflecting about this friend. He says, "Some knew him as demanding. I knew him as direct. Some knew him as imposing. I knew him as interesting. Some knew him as tough. I knew him as tender. Some knew him as impossible. I knew him as intelligent. Some knew him as impatient. I knew that he wasted no time. I knew him as driven, detailed, focused, and accomplished. He reminds me of perfection, accomplishment, charity, to walk tall and to be proud." Wow, isn't that beautiful? I loved it. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. You know, a lot of times we look at the exterior, and especially during this Lenten time, Lenten season, as we're reflecting about life, we got to really figure out, you know, what's the function? Form and function, right? We get so consumed by the form of things, when really, what's it all about? I mean, we look at the exteriors of people. We see tough, rough people. And what can I learn from them? What is this life all about? What are they doing over there? You know, he's demanding, imposing, tough, impossible, impatient. And here we find somebody reflecting about that kind of personality in a very positive way. And really, it's the message that comes home to all of us. This is what we all have to do. Be able to see that goodness. When we talk about seeing God in your brother's eyes, to being able to look at a person and seeing the presence of God, this is what it's all about. Yeah, there's a lot of rough exterior, but inside each of us, there is that God essence, right? There is God living within us, that whole universe coming together. And that is good. Can we find that good inside of people? Imagine what would happen, huh, if we were able to look beyond the exteriors, look beyond the form and see the function, that these are people that are struggling through life just as you and I are trying to struggle through life, and getting by, and really accomplishing. Accomplishing not in that material wealth only, but accomplishing by making friends, by reaching out to people and sharing the love that's in their heart. Now, last night I said something happened. So we were at our Lenten service, and I usually use the Armenian prayer book. And you know that most of our services are in the ancient Armenian language, and it's easy for us to get caught up in the form again, right? And forget about the function. So I was I was praying, my deacon was next to me. And for some reason, I don't know, maybe it was divinely sent, right? Okay. For some reason, he reached over and he pulled out one of the prayer books that had the Armenian and the English translation right next to it. So I'm standing there during the Lenten service, and the deacons and the people. We had a pretty full house last night, and the people are chanting and they're praying, and we have this service, beautiful, beautiful service that we do only during the Lenten season. And we get to the prayer of Saint Nodic, Saint Gregory of Nodic. This is more than a prayer. It's actually a discourse that he had. And I had a chance to look at the English translation. I go, whoa, you know, this is like, You know, you read the Armenian, and, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, right? Yeah, you don't want to admit that, but, you know, how many times have I read this in Armenian? But last night I had a chance to look at the English translation. And that's what I want to share with you today. And it's a prelude, really, to the rest of today's show, because it fell right in place. I had this beautiful opportunity to connect with a friend, with Gabriel and KDJ, and we were talking, and, you know, that was fresh in my mind. I've been contemplating, what do we do as... You know, that's true to our faith. Okay, we preach a good message about love, about compassion, but are we out there becoming the hands of Christ? Are we out there becoming the feet of Christ, walking that extra mile for our brothers and sisters? Are we sharing the love that's in our heart? And all of a sudden, I read this powerful prayer and discourse by Saint Gregory of Nodic, and I want to share it with you, and then make a few reflections about it. St. Gregory writes, he says, Son of the living God, blessed in every way, inscrutably begotten of your redoubtable Father, verily nothing is impossible with you. Holy moly, these are really intense words. This sounds probably Archbishop Didon Nersoyan did the translation on this one. This sounds like his translation, 1950s. A little bit archaic, but... It's very powerful. Are you ready for this? Okay, now listen, and this is the part that really got me. When your light shines, and your compassion, and your glory, sins melt away, demons are dispersed, inequities are effaced, bonds are broken, chains are shattered, the dead are revived, wounds are healed, sores are cured, corruptions are wiped out, sadness given away, groans retreat, gloom runs away, the mist is dispelled, the fog is dissipated, shadows are consumed, obscurity is dissolved, darkness is lifted, the night departs, anguish is banished, evil is annihilated, despair is driven away, and your omnipotent hand reigns proprietary unto all. Now, you know, the easy way of looking at this is to say that this is a Christian prayer. What we're challenged to do during the Lenten season is really understand it in its entirety. You know, we sometimes get fooled, and we've been given this unfortunate set of circumstances, especially here in America, where a lot of times, especially the fundamental understanding of religion, okay, so you say, oh yeah, Jesus does this. Jesus removes the clouds, he makes it dark. But, you know, Saint Nerses Shnorhali gives us the primer. He says the name of Jesus is love. In other words, if A equals B and B equals C, therefore A equals C, right? So now you've put in that primer. You know what A equals. If you know that Jesus is love, now read this same prayer in that understanding, okay? Put away all your preconceptions and just understand it in this sense. Now listen to this now, okay? If you've got that primer in there, now let's reread that prayer. It says, when the light of love shines, when love is out there, what happens? Sins melt away, demons are dispersed, inequities are effaced, bonds are broken, chains are shattered, the dead are revived. That's what love does. That's what love is all about. Wounds are healed, sores are cured, corruptions are wiped away, sadness is given away, groans retreat, gloom runs away, the mist is dispelled, the fog is dissipated. That's what love is. You see, we get so consumed about naming things. And this is what I love about this prayer over here. It's about the Son of the Living God. What is that? That's love. That's what changes people. That's what we're called to really focus in on. Is that new perception of not looking at rough exteriors, not looking at exteriors at all, but understanding that the heart inside is compassion. And that compassion demands us to reach out. It demands us to not be content in the darkness and really be that opportunity for light, not only in our lives, but in others' lives, in other lives. I'm just throwing this out as a small meditation. I'll try to put up a link on our website to this prayer, St. Gregory of Nodeg. This is Discourse number 41. Just a beautiful, beautiful prayer that really talks about how powerful the Spirit can be, how powerful love can be. When we talk about the omnipotence of God, it's not a Superman God that's out there that says, oh yeah, there's a problem over there. I think I'll just swoop down from heaven and just annihilate the bad guy. Don't you get it? There are no bad guys. We're all sons and daughters of God, right? So every war that's out there is a civil war for God, because there's no boundaries out there. Can we look beyond that rough exterior and see that there is a hurting heart on the other side? Can we reach out? I know it's tough. I know. It's really, really tough. But it's really that higher point that we've got to be working towards. We may not attain it, but we've got to be focused in on it and working towards that. Let's break for our song for today. I've got Gabriel Starring coming up in the second portion. Here's a man who's able to articulate that love, the love that's in his heart, by reaching out to people. We a lot of times talk about genocide in historical terms, something that happened 100 years ago. Here's somebody who's looking at people who are afflicted by genocide, the reality of genocide today. Yes, 2015. Coming up in a couple minutes. Here's today's song. Enjoy. That is Ashkharumas by Arax, off of their Crossing album. Hope you enjoyed it. And I will make sure that there is a link on today's show notes so you can check out not only that song, but all of the wonderful music that they put together. And if you do enjoy this, do encourage them. We feature an artist every week. And just some music you wouldn't hear otherwise. So hope you enjoyed that one. Beautiful Armenian music, traditional instruments in a contemporary manner. Yeah, that's what it's all about, right? Okay, coming up right now, Gabriel Saring. Had him in the studio yesterday. Here's the interview. I'm really happy to have with me today Gabriel Saring, the founder and executive director of IACT, which we'll get into. I've known him for almost 10 years and just had a great friendship that has evolved over something that people don't like to talk about, over genocide. Yeah. But in that conversation, we've had a chance to collaborate, to talk, and today, just really happy he's with me in the studio. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you, Father V. It's always a pleasure. I wish we'd get together more often. And yeah, it is true that, it's a tough issue, genocide, but I've met some amazingly beautiful people and the connections and friendships that are just for a lifetime, and you're one of those special ones.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Tell me a little bit, and our listeners, tell me a little bit about what you do. Tell me about IACT. I know we had Stop Genocide Now, and tell me about the whole experience. You're involved in Darfur.
Yeah, so it started as a very personal journey. Back in 2004, which was the 10th anniversary of Rwanda, and on the 10th anniversary, all this information started coming out about Rwanda 10 years after the fact. The movie Hotel Rwanda and news shows and. I was working as an in-home counselor for abused children here in California, and I would have to drive long distances to visit my families. And one week, I spent parts of my car drive listening to this show on Rwanda, and it was this a very personal account of the genocide in Rwanda. They would give the story from the perspective of the victims, survivors, mm-hmm. and then also the perpetrators, and it was just this this very shocking journey that I was listening to throughout the week. And personally, I went through first hearing the numbers about 800,000 people killed in 100 days, and I was in shock, and then about how the world did nothing to respond, and it made me angry. And then towards the end of the week, it just hit me that I had done nothing myself. So guilt really hit me big. And I thought back to 94. I'm definitely old enough to where I could have and should have done something. And I remember watching news about Rwanda, and I would just switch the channel, to sports, because it was just felt too ugly, too far away, too overwhelming, and that it had nothing to do with me. So then, jump forward 10 years. I'm seeing this, going through that, and then I started to hear about Darfur, and I just said, okay, no excuses. I just got to do something. I got to be able to say that I did something about Darfur, and that started. That was the first step. Just kind of allowing myself to step through the door to action. And I started looking into what was happening in Darfur. It was being called a genocide. Hundreds of thousands of people being killed, millions displaced. It was, again, huge and very overwhelming. And I started to connect with others, just regular people across the U.S. also that were feeling the same way as I did. And the big thing that I saw that was missing was a way for people like me to connect with it at a personal level. That's how... Less than a year later, I was walking in a refugee camp. I just thought, hey, we'll go out there. We'll bring cameras. We'll sit with the survivors and tell their story and have people meet genocide through the story of a child or of a mother or a father. And I thought it was going to be one trip. I thought for sure the world would, after Rwanda.
This is 2005.
This is 2005.
You're thinking it's one trip, and how many has it been
now?
And
I'm done. So I just got back about 3 weeks ago or so from my 20th trip.
20, wow.
Yeah, so it became what I do. We run a nonprofit now that still focuses on awareness and education on this side, and also on having an influence on the political aspects of responding to mass atrocities and genocide. But then a lot more concretely, we continue to go to the camps, and we work next to the refugees and on programs that they have told us are important to them, mm-hmm. what their needs are, what their hopes are, what they hope for their own children. So we've started, co-created a preschool program with them, have co-created a soccer program with them, that focuses on creating peace from the bottom up. So starting with children.
Let's get into a little bit about that, because I think this whole peace process, ultimately, if you're against genocide, you're for peace, right? And
right.
So how do you do that? Like, you're dealing with people who have gone through not just war, but genocide. And what's the peace process? What are you talking about when you? What's in your mind for peace?
Yeah, so one amazing thing of walking into a refugee camp after being hit by the enormity of it, and knowing that every single person you see, mm-hmm. Has experienced some horrible things that you don't want to even imagine, and that they're going on a daily basis through just the struggle of surviving. But it also hits you how beautiful they are, how alive they are, and how it's just humanity right there in the most beautiful form. Even as they struggle to survive, they are welcoming, and they still have all the hopes and dreams that anybody else around the world have. So we focus on those strengths, and then we know that peace comes through, starts with at the personal level, through empathy and compassion, be able to communicate on a positive way from person to person. So that's why we really believe in supporting the programs that the refugees told us were important to them, which was helping the youngest mm-hmm. of their children to be healthy, to have a space that is positive and nourishing, where they can thrive. And we know that if at those early stages you promote the qualities that bring peace later on, mm-hmm. it's just a very, very good investment.
Is it safe to say that you kind of overlook the older generation in that process? Like, your focus has to be on youth, because there's potential there?
Yeah, so...
potential for peace?
It is, in a way, the hardest, but then also the easiest, because children, that's who they are. Mm-hmm. They want to play, they want to love, they want to be held and feel tenderness, so it's just so natural. What was a really nice surprise was that when we started planning for these programs, we were focusing only on the children and looking at what's the latest science on development and then bringing in their culture. But then we started working with the teachers and the coaches, it's been beautiful to see them. These are young men and women that experienced the genocide firsthand, and they really never had a childhood themselves. So that when we're teaching them how to use play to build empathy and compassion within children, you see it in them for the first time. They're doing it with such joy, and then besides that, they're becoming leaders in their camps, and they're becoming mm-hmm. these positive leaders. So our main focus is this age group that we know, 20 years from now, they're going to be the key to rebuilding their homeland, and to do it from a peaceful stand, perspective, it's also beautiful to offer this whole other opportunity to the generation that also experienced the violence and the horrors personally.
But I would imagine that you would run across some opposition. I mean, it's always easier to hate somebody. It's always easier to talk the message of hate, and there's a power in that too. Do you find opposition among the people that you're working with over there, or are they relatively easy to...
No, there's for sure opposition. There are some then groups that that will find it hard to forgive, but there's enough positive people, and I think it's overwhelmingly positive. I don't think I've ever sat with a mother that tells me, I want to go back and I seek revenge because my children were killed or I saw my mother being raped. Never. For them is I want my children to thrive, you know? And even though they've been sitting in a refugee camp for 13 years, they say, I really would like want my daughter to become a doctor like she says she wants to be and or become a teacher. There are, you know, some elements that kind of carry on, and it's hard to blame them because they went through some horrible things. But I think in general, it is a very positive people, and they would rather go the positive way. And of course, they do talk about justice, that they want to feel that it's safe, so they wouldn't go back to a land that's still... is flooded in with weapons, so there is that.
You use the word forgive. Can we talk a little bit about that? I know that you have people who are talking about forgiveness. It's unusual for me because I could talk about, in my case, an Armenian genocide 100 years ago. You're talking about people who are still displaced. They're in refugee camps. Mm-hmm. Are they open to that dialogue? Are they talking about this?
They are very open to forgiveness in general, some talk about it very eloquently about how going through the right process, they are ready to forgive and go live right next to some of the groups that they feel are part of the perpetrators. They do believe in a process, though. They do believe in justice, but they don't see justice as revenge. They see it as an acknowledgement, you know, that changes have to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, real changes. Since it is so recent and violence is going on right now. Over the last year alone, another 600,000 people have been displaced in Darfur. Nobody has talked about it. It's
600,000.
600,000 over the last year alone. So it continues. Exactly what was happening 13 years ago, what led to the declaration of genocide by the U.S., is happening right now. Villages are getting bombed. Militias are riding in. They're destroying. They're raping. So exactly the same thing, but it's just not being covered. So it's, you know, it's not happening. Nobody's seen it. It's hard, but still even amazing that they can still think that they would go back and live next to some of these groups. But again, since it's so real, they say, you know, there would have to be disarmament. There would have to be, in many of the lands have been repopulated also by other groups. So they don't, it's never going to be the same. But they are willing to forgive and go back if there is a certain process.
Let's talk a little bit about genocide. I look at genocide as a survivor from 100 years removed from genocide. Now, a lot of times think that the experiences of these new genocides, so to speak, whether it's in Hitler's Germany or whether it's in Cambodia or today in Darfur, are just really evolutions of the same genocide, or are they individually exclusive of one another?
I definitely believe in connecting the dots, and I know it's just numbers, but it is. I think there is something there that Armenia is the first genocide of last century, and Darfur the first one of this one, mm-hmm. and you could break it down to its different phases or stages, and it would be very, very similar, where one group is dehumanized, mm-hmm. that they're identified as a group, that they're dehumanized, that they're seen as less, and then one population is told, you have to fear that other one, and you're going to have to go get them before they get you, and then start pushing them out. There's many, many similarities, and 100 years have gone by, one thing that is very, very similar is the way the world responds to them, which is not responding until after the fact. So we've gotten so good at saying never again until it happens again. I don't see too much difference. During Armenia, there wasn't even the word genocide. It didn't come until decades later. Lemkin, who coined the word, thought that would make a difference. We now know that it hasn't. Darfur was labeled a genocide right away. And 13 years later, the exact same type of violence is happening.
And what's holding up things? I mean, why? This seems like a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
People are dying. Yeah. There's powers that could end it, and we're not. What's holding up things?
I think there's different levels of it. I think it's always others. It's happening to others, and it's over there. It has nothing to do with me. So just at that level, for most humans, they don't see that something as big as genocide has anything to do with them, and it's never going to happen to us. Mm-hmm. It's never going to happen to me, and I'm never going to be the perpetrator either. And I think that's one thing that we have to realize, that the potential for both is there, that mm-hmm. we're all potentially a victim or a perpetrator, and that we have to see ourselves in both of those to start making the change and in finding some of the solution.
That's a big one, and you need to explain that, because if I was listening for the first time, I'd say, what do you mean? I have the potential for genocide? How is that possible? Explain that.
Yeah, so dehumanizing, I think, shouldn't even happen against the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. They are humans. They're just like us. Mm-hmm. There are some things that are happening, and it's usually a controlled environment where it's a few men in power that have very specific goals, and then they use some very human emotions and feelings and start changing the perceived environment. So they start to identify a group and say, okay, that group that has these characteristics are somehow a threat to us. Mm-hmm. And then you start dehumanizing, saying they're less than us. And we're just all so, it's part of our nature to accept those, generalities and stereotypes, because that's, part of our genetics is to kind of group things together and be able to think of what's going to make me safer. So I think we're just all naturally, ready for something like that. So it really has to be a conscious effort to prepare ourselves to not take in what others gives us just because, it sounds right. And again, it kind of goes to me about why you have to start work. Anti-genocide work has to start with children.
It has to start right there.
For the adult, it's a whole other process. For the child, it's really just working on some of the very natural things, that come instinctively as empathy and compassion.
I know, as we're working on our project for the 100th anniversary, it's like, how do we find the language that is not anti-Turkish in this case, mm-hmm. because if you look at most of the stuff that's out there, it's you're dropping seeds that can later be picked up from people and mm-hmm. say, okay, well, this is a bad guy. I think what happened in Nazi Germany is always interesting for me, that the Jews were successful in isolating the Nazis from the Germans, so that mm-hmm. we always refer to it as Nazi Germany, and we refer to the bad guy as the Nazis.
Right.
And right now, it's okay to hate Nazis, but you can't hate Germans, and you can't hate Turks, you can't hate Armenians, you can't hate people, because those mm-hmm. are living entities. So in your work with these kids, how do you get across that concept that it's not okay to hate. It's not okay. Even if they did these awful things to you, you need to move forward. You need to, how do you get that message across to the youngest of the kids?
Yeah, so in our preschool program, it is so basic. We go in with some basic things, like the three pillars of our Little Ripples programs are peace, helping, and sharing. So that is some of the most simple things to explain to a child, and some of the most powerful and impacting thing for the rest of their lives. And what we do is that we work with the young refugee women as teachers in them using their own stories, their own environment, to start talking about that, about opportunities to share about sharing and about helping others and about recognizing differences as differences and positive, not as something negative. Looking at strengths. All our programs are strength based, so we have teachers looking around the classroom or for our soccer program, or looking on the field for everything that the kids are doing right and trying to make that more. Instead of looking for all the kids that are doing wrong and saying that is bad, you know, going on the positive. So all those little things that are on a very personal, behavioral level, we know that that's going to translate to a more peaceful future. We also really like using mindfulness. There's just amazing science on mindfulness lately coming out. There was a study of a high school here in San Francisco in a very rough neighborhood that started doing just a few minutes of mindful breathing every morning. The statistics that happen after that are just amazing about the reduction in violence, in dropouts, in kids not attending school. It's just numbers that you can't believe after just a few minutes of mindful breathing, which is internal peace. So we're doing that with these tiny little kids from Darfur in these camps, and we know that that's going to make a difference for a peaceful future.
So you mean you can't stop violence, with more violence?
I know that the people will keep trying.
People
will keep trying.
Okay, well, this is really refreshing and beautiful to hear. Gabriel, I know that next month you're going to be going back to Chad, going back to the refugee camps, yes. And it happens to be the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. We're going to have an opportunity to be working together via a conference call or such event that we'll be putting together. Tell me a little bit about what you do when you get to the refugee camps. Who can we expect to see on the other side of our screen, and where that's going?
Yeah, so we'll do a two-way video conversation, which is just going to be amazing. It's not just from one continent to another. It's also going to be 100 years, a communication across 100 years from Armenia 1915 to Darfur 2015. You're going to meet some beautiful people from the camps. There's some great friends in refugee camp Jabal. I'm going to have Umda Tarbosh with me. I'm going to have Adam, two amazing leaders. And then Ashta and her children, little Gizma, they've been through some the horrors of violence, but you sit with them and you feel nothing but joy. Mm-hmm. I go to Ashta's home every time I go to her camp. She has these beautiful kids, four boys and one girl, Gizma, and they bring out the mat and it just feels such a happy environment. And then she starts telling me that the kids have not eaten since the day before. So it's just amazing how they can still be so positive and welcoming and smiling, even going through the most toughest situations.
In these refugee camps, they're not eating, or what is? I know that there's some rationing, right?
They're getting rations from the World Food Program and other support from the UN Refugee Agency and partnering NGOs. But all of this has been getting cut and very drastically over the last year. They went from getting 2,100 calories per person per day, which is the minimum standard internationally for in these humanitarian crises, to now receiving around 800 calories, best case scenario. Umda, his family, which is considered to be a little bit well off in his camp, I don't think they're doing it in every camp, but they have different levels also of how much they give to different refugees depending on their needs. And in his camp, he's only getting 257 calories per person per day. So there's so little opportunity for them to supplement in any way. There are no job opportunities. If you go to some of these camps, they're in the middle of the desert. There's not a lot of planting that they can do. Animals are hard to come by. So families are just surviving on a very minimum level of sustenance.
So we're going to be checking in, and I'm sure that people will be connecting with us in various means. They want to help. How can they help? What are some of the programs?
Well, our Little Ripples program, it's a preschool program that mm-hmm. we're very, very proud of. It began from conversations with Umda mm-hmm. about how there was this vacuum in services for the youngest children of preschool age. And from there, we started, working with the refugees to design something that really fit their situation. And from there came Little Ripples. And where we have selected and trained young refugee women to be the teachers and to be the ones that run the schools and the centers. So that's a perfect opportunity. And again, we see it as the perfect space to start building peace for the future for Darfuris. And we really see it as a model that can then be replicated in any other emergency situation. And we're working on scaling it up. We're doing it heavy with assessment and keeping track of everything we're doing to see what needs to be improved and what needs to be changed and what impact it's having. And in including in there, we're starting meal programs for these children. For most of them, it might be their only healthy meal of the day. Mm-hmm. So all of this, I think, has an immediate impact on these families. But then also for the future, it's a kid that might be developing a little bit better, more healthy, their brain is getting more nourishment, so that 20 years from now, they're in a better place to be leaders for their people.
Wow. So people who wanting to participate, they could earmark their donation for Little
Ripples. Yeah, and it would go directly to Little Ripples.
Okay, fantastic. On that day when we're talking to each other, I know over here we're going to be fasting, and I think what's important is that we keep everything in focus, that there's a reason to do this. We want to be walking with you. We want to be sharing with you. On the other side, does that offer any hope, or are these just motions that we go through? I'm trying to be very practical. With us sitting here in a church, very comfortable, mm-hmm. knowing that we're not eating out of choice, mm-hmm. how is that received on the other end? Are they laughing at us? Are they appreciative?
It is so powerful, Father V. It's some of the questions that I had starting and working on this, and we did fast early on, and some of the what might be considered abstract symbolic things, but it is so powerful for them to know that there are people that are standing with them. I know that we're also helping concretely with some real things. But for them, the power of knowing that somebody is right there with them, that you're thinking about them, that you care about them, it's invaluable to them. That they have felt abandoned. When I first visited Umda's camp 7 years ago, I had a meeting with him and some other leaders, and one of the first questions I asked, I said, what would you want the world to know about you? And one refugee leader stood up and thought for a while, and then he said, what I want them to know is that you're the first person to ask me that question. So that nobody cares about them. They feel that, that nobody goes there and is just with them and cares enough to ask what are your hopes and dreams? So to know that a group out here on the other side of the world cares about them, it just goes so far.
I remember an incident in Rwanda. We were standing in front of a refugee camp, and one of the members said, "What is it that you want from us?" You know, and when she asked that question, it came into my mind, "What do you want?" Well, give me a list, and I'll go to Costco and get it for you, because you know, after all, you're hungry, and yeah, we have Costco down the street. And it was interesting. One answer after the next was just, don't forget about us. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming out.
Yeah.
Don't forget us. There was not one
right
request for, you know, get me a box of this or
yeah.
get me a phone for that, you know. So I'm sure these are the same experiences.
I keep on hearing that also. Yeah. Do not forget
do
about
not
us.
Do not forget about us.
When asking you, what message do you want me to take back? Tell them to not forget about us.
And I can't impress upon our listeners enough that this is so similar, because it's exactly what happened 100 years ago. People just forgot. The president of the United States, Woodrow Wilson, knew that there was a genocide going on, and he had nice words, and as do today, as Obama does and as Bush did, they have nice words.
Yeah, yeah.
But when do you put them into action? So
yeah, this like again, Samantha Power said, people care, but how many care enough to act?
Mm-hmm. Hence, I act, right?
I act.
Gabriel, it is a pleasure to have you. I want to thank you for joining me today on behalf of even the martyrs, if I could go back and say that. 100 years ago, I'm sure that they all wish that there was a Gabriel that would have visited them, that would have gotten the message out. So I want to do my part to just get this message out. And we'll be together on April 25th. We'll
yes.
be connecting, and we'll have hopefully a worldwide audience that'll be in there. So I want to wish
Great.
You the best.
Thank you, Father.
God's blessings with you and all the work that you do with your beautiful wife and lovely kid. And be well.
Okay? Thank you, Father. And see you from the camps.
Okay. Take care.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that message, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. It's an important one, because as we're moving forward toward the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, it's important for us to put together the means by which we commemorate. It's not enough that we just remember something, but we have to have an opportunity to make that alive today in our lives by reaching out to others. And on April 24th, that weekend, we're going to have this incredible opportunity for you to articulate your feelings toward the genocide, to commemorate. We will have a link on today's show notes. Do check out today's show notes so you can check out where Gabriel can be found, how to connect with the Little Ripples Project, how to donate, but also we'll have some information about the In Issues. Do check out the InIssues.org website, because all of these activities will be featured over there in the next coming month. These are opportunities for us to really commemorate in a real way. Okay, so we went through this genocide, and each of us have been impacted by it. I know for me, it's my grandmothers, it's my grandparents, that their stories came to me. My great-grandparents were all annihilated, were all just taken out. And you know, here's a guy, here I am, you know, in 2015, and you say, well, what does that matter? That's ancient history. Think about it in a practical terms. There's no history. You don't have a history of yourself. In practical terms, okay, a few years ago, when I went through some health issues, what happened? Doctors wanted to know history, family history. Guess what? There is no history. It's annihilated. It's gone. Okay, there's a practical reason why that history is important. But as much as that history is important today to remember, and of course justice is the ultimate thing. You want justice to take place. You need justice for there to be closure to these issues. But in the same way, you can close these issues for yourself by reaching out to people. And that's what In His Shoes is all about. It's a group of young Armenians that came together over 10 years ago. And we decided that, hey, you know, if we are Armenian and we are Christian, and that those two assets that we have, they have to mean something beyond the words. We have to be not only the first Christian nation, we have to be the first people to proclaim that Christianity in terms of justice, in terms of reaching out to people who cannot reach out otherwise, becoming the hands, the legs, the mouth of Christ here on this world. What would Christ do in a genocide situation? Wouldn't he be out there with compassion, healing, and protecting, and being the voice for the voiceless? And here's your opportunity. So 100 Souls in His Shoes is exactly that program. This weekend, it will start coming up on our website, the different aspects of it. Susie's busy working on it. We've got Ani working on it, and it's taking form. I want to thank everybody who's already committed to the project. Wherever you may be, I know that this is going to be a meaningful way of commemoration. Today, you got a chance to hear what's going on in Darfur firsthand, okay? I invite you to get on Gabriel's blog, get on Gabriel's website, check out the firsthand account that he has. In every one of his visits that he goes out there to these refugee camps, he blogs. On April 25th, 26th, we're going to have an opportunity to connect right with the refugee camps. We're going to be doing a live, as we said a few minutes ago, we're going to be doing a live feed, and there will be opportunities for everybody to connect. You want to make 100 years meaningful? Okay, let's do it. There's no other way around it. You've got to do it. You've got to take this opportunity and become part of it. So inhisshoes.org, as well as all of the usual spots you find us, Facebook, connect with us, get in touch, and we will be providing content like you've never seen before. Hey, listen, we are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. For the wonderful team who brings to you Next Step every week. For what is this now? 5, 6, 7 years. For the last 7 years. For Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off by one top minutes.